This is Thursday, March the 28th, and we are on air for Fanta Racing Radio for our Richmond NASCAR Weekend Preview and Hot Topics Sound Off. Joining us for today's show is our co-host, Brian Eberle. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Sharon. Happy Thursday. How's it going?
It's going well. We're going to start off with some short track news and the upcoming races. Afterward, we're going to update the ARCA Menards, the ARCA East, and the ARCA West series. And then Monday, we had to cancel the show, but I had scheduled to have a post-race media interview for the NASCAR Truck Series driver, Corey Heim. He won the Truck Series race last weekend. And so we're going to listen to that. It's only a little more than 5 minutes, and then we'll comment on that. Then afterward, we'll get update the Truck Series. They're not racing this weekend at Richmond, but the NASCAR Xfinity Series and the Cup Series are racing at Richmond this weekend, and we'll preview those races. And then, of course, we'll end with our Hot Topic Sound Off with the Fan for Racing crew. So, Brian, you want to get us started with some short track news?
Yeah, sure. Not sure what order you want to go in, but I think the one that I thought was kind of interesting yesterday was that ARCA's already canceled the race for Irwindale this weekend due to the pending weather. So I feel like that's something kind of a bit of a newer theme, even not just amongst motorsports, but they canceled two Major League Baseball games for today already yesterday just based on the weather forecast. So you hate to see it, but also I think it's probably better for, you know, teams, fans, competitors, everyone involved to at least know that in advance, but that got kicked all the way back to July. So kind of a crazy wait time there, but I do appreciate them kind of looking that in advance and not, you know, wasting everyone's time this weekend sitting around on the track all day in the rain. So bummer, but at least it's an advanced bummer, and I think allows better planning for everyone involved.
Yes, that, of course, would fall under our ARCA discussion in the next 15 minutes, and we will talk about that then for sure. But if you want to see the short track news that I put out, it's on our teams page under your thread. I will say, Chase, talking about NASCAR, though, Chase Briscoe, who used to race in the ARCA Menards Series, he's going to start his own sprint car team this year. And I thought that was really kind of cool to hear, too. Tyler Burnett writes about it over on Flow Racing. Chase Briscoe kind of comes from that background, so it's really cool to see him now starting his own sprint car team this year.
Yeah, I think that's awesome, and I've, you know, known Chase since covering him in the ARCA days. Still catch up with him every so often. I think it's, you know, awesome to see him kind of continue to give back to the lower levels, race himself sometimes as well. It seems like they've got a really good partnership with Mahindra, you know, at his cup car and also sponsoring a lot of his dirt efforts. And they're on his car at the Chili Bowl back in January as well. So really cool to see. Obviously, when those guys get at the cup level, they're pulled in a lot of different directions and really busy, but awesome to see him still kind of giving back to the grassroots level when and where he can.
Absolutely, absolutely. You want to cover the next one or – you want me to cover it?
Yes, for sure. So up next, we got Bubba Pollard running the Xfinity Series race this weekend at Richmond. I think, you know, we've talked about that on the show. I think we were actually recording the show when that got announced a few weeks ago. So really cool to see that that's kind of coming up to fruition. And over on Flow Racing, Brandon Paul kind of did a really nice story on, you know, how that came to be between Bubba Pollard and Junior Motorsports and Dale Jr. giving him a call giving him the opportunity to go out there and race at Richmond. So it should be pretty cool to see this weekend. You know, don't know how he'll do. Obviously, a very limited practice time in an Xfinity Series car. They drive a lot different than probably what he's used to. So interesting to see how quickly he can adapt. Obviously, he's got some of the best in the sport on his side, and it seems, you know, pretty popular throughout the garage area. I think everyone wants to see him do really well this weekend.
They're rolling on. Here's Alex Knighton takes a look at what's to watch this weekend. in the World of Outlaws, and that's over at the worldofoutlaws.com website. It's always good to see them racing every weekend or all the weekends that they do race. And there's a lot going on this weekend in the World of Outlaws. So you've got the Thunderbird debut, trip to 81. There's all kinds of things going on at Thunderbird Speedway this weekend, and you can read all about that over at worldofoutlaws.com.
Yeah, I think we'll really kind of start to see everything ramp up now as it gets, you know, warmer across the country. World of Outlaws, High Limits had a pretty big break in their schedule as well. I don't think they get ramped up again for another couple weeks till almost mid-April. So a lot more coming down the pipeline for sure. A lot more to get excited about.
Absolutely. But Whelen's going to be active this weekend as well, the modified tour.
Yep. They are racing at Richmond as well, I believe, correct? Is that correct?
Yes, they are racing at Richmond. And yes, and our friend Rob Blount writes about it over at Flow Racing. So really cool to see that happening. If the Whelen modified tour is racing this weekend, you can bet Ryan Newman's on that entry list.
Yeah, it's always great to see Newman back out there running again. 28-car entry list for this weekend, so it's pretty solid. I think we've kind of seen, you know, some larger entry lists across motorsports so far in 2024. And the modifieds never seem to disappoint when they get out there on the track, and it's kind of cool to see them be running with the Cup and the Xfinity Series drivers and getting a little bit more focused. And, yeah, pretty solid entry list. Obviously, you know, a lot of the big names, Doug Coby, Bobby Santos, guys that you hear throughout all there. Bobby Labonte's on the entry list as well, running in the 38 car. So a little bit of Cup flavor there, and as you mentioned, or former Cup flavor there, I should say. And as you mentioned, Ryan Newman also on that entry list of 28 cars set to do battle at Richmond. That race is slated for 6:30 p.m. Eastern time on Friday night with coverage on Flow Racing. So something to check out there before we get into the weekend at Richmond.
Yes, indeed. Also, again, because we didn't get to do the show on Monday night, I wanted to mention that Cole Butcher was the winner of the ASA Stars National Tour race at the Sunshine State, the Sunshine State 200 at Five Flags Speedway. And it was really kind of cool because he comes from Nova Scotia, Canada, and he was able to move past his teammate, Gio Ruggiero, on that final time on the lap 178. He cruised to a 2.1-second margin of victory in the second race of the national tour for the AFA Stars. So Jacob Gomes was in that race, and Stephen Nassy. Those are all names that if you watch AFA tour, you're going to hear about those names for sure. And their next race, just so you know, they're going to be back in action Thursday evening, May the 23rd, out at Hickory Motor Speedway for the Tar Heel 250. Imagine that, Brian.
Yeah, great performance for Butcher. Pretty dominating, it seems like, from that. And I believe that race is going to re-air on MAV TV coming up on April 1st for anybody that didn't get the chance to see that live this past weekend.
Yes, that's always fun. You can take the next one if you want, too. These are races that are coming up this weekend.
Yep, we got a lot of different racing going on again already. Racing America, Flow Racing, going to be a very valuable tool if you have any of those streaming services for sure. We've got double the pro late model racing on RacingAmerica.tv on Saturday with action at Cordell Motor Speedway and Mobile International Speedway. They both have pro late model action on Saturday, March 30th, that you can watch live, of course, on Racing America TV. And over there, they've got the schedules kind of laid out, the hour by hour. And where did I scroll right here incorrectly?
Five-time Orange County track champion is going to be in action this weekend out at for the Orange Crush 200.
Yeah. a lot of great racing going on this weekend. I'm pretty excited to. Good thing I've got the three TVs to try to catch all that with basketball and baseball going on as well. So it'll be a good good weekend of action.
Also, if you're missing Ward Burton, he's going to be at the Orange Crush 200. Him and Jeb Burton are both going to be racing that race. And I'm talking about his son, Jeb Burton, often misheard as Jeff Burton. But, yeah, it's going to be Ward and Jeb Burton racing at the Orange Crush 200. And you can watch all that, like Brian mentioned, at Racing America TV. So to learn more, you want to go over to orangecrushrace.com and check out what they have to say. They can, by the way, Ward and Jeff Burton have been testing late models over at Orange for that Orange Crush 200. So there's a video about that over at Racing America as well. So a lot to look forward to this weekend in the world of racing.
Yeah, no doubt. And I was Ward Burton. That's kind of, he was very popular when I first kind of became a race fan. So him and that number 22 Caterpillar car are always a earlier racing days memory for me, for sure. So always cool to see him back on the track and anything.
Yes. Yeah, so I always blame my son for getting me into NASCAR, because he called me from Daytona when Ward Burton won the Daytona 500, and during the red flag is when he called me, and he says, "Ma, you got to watch the Daytona 500. A Burton is going to win the Daytona 500." And so I scrolled through the channels to find it, found it just in time to see Sterling Marlin pulling out his finger. And as they say, the rest is history. And Ward Burton won that race.
That's another pretty iconic moment there for sure.
So it's all their fault for getting me into NASCAR.
And now here you are.
And now here I am. Okay, so here we go. We're going to get into, we talked about the fact that the ARCA Menards Series West race at Irwindale Speedway, it was supposed to take place this weekend, but it was postponed to July 6th. That's the next time that they're going to race at Irwindale, and I think they're going to make it a doubleheader that weekend. So it's going to be kind of an exciting weekend to watch the ARCA Menards Series race two races out at Irwindale Speedway in July. But I agree with Brian. It's so good that they postponed it now to give fans a chance to plan their weekend and know that that race isn't going to take place. So I can't believe all the rain they're getting out in California. Isn't that incredible? Usually it's so dry and not humid.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because when I first heard that it was postponed, I was like, wait, the West race? I was thinking it was maybe something on the East Coast, because I know they're getting rain and the Mets and Phillies games are postponed today, and less than stellar forecast coming into the weekend for them. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy, but it's kind of the weather these days, I guess. It's really hard to predict.
It is. It is indeed. Again, since we didn't do the show on Monday, we're going to give you a quick recap of the Five Flag Speedway Pensacola 150. Giovanni is his full name, last name Ruggiero, won Saturday's ARCA Menards Series race at Five Flag Speedway. It was his first career East victory. He is the 129th different driver to score at least one East Series win, and it was his second career East Series start. He finished fourth the first time he was out, and that was last May, out at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. So really cool to see Gio Ruggiero win that race.
Yeah, great win for him for sure. And another guy that had a pretty great day last weekend was Connor Zilts, coming up and making a name for himself, signed with Trackhouse Racing and been running stuff kind of all over the place already for Spire Motorsports and others. He actually started from the pole and finished fourth in his truck series debut at Circuit of the Americas, and then immediately bound for the airport for a quick little flight from Austin, Texas to Pensacola, where Luke Fenhouse qualified his car so he had to start from the rear of the field, but he ran through the pack, was running third in the first half of the race, had some fuel pressure issues, halftime break. They made the change, new fuel pump for him, and he was able to come back up and finish fourth again as well. So two fourth-place finishes, two top fives between two different states for a very young, up-and-coming prospect, promising prospect for sure. So huge day for him, and really excited to see, you know, where he goes, him going to the truck pole and blistering fast speed at COTA was, I think, pretty impressive, and definitely got a lot of people in the industry talking about him if they weren't already.
Yeah. And excuse me. The main competition with Gerald Cross. Excuse me. My dog is here, so you might hear her bark. I'm hoping not. You might have to go with it, but I was going to talk about William Sawalich, the pole sitter. I've got to get to get a drink of water.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so Sawalich led the first 79 laps of that race from the pole. Unfortunately, he lost that lead after the halftime break and came home second in the Joe Gibbs Racing Machine. He had won the three previous ARCA Menards Series East races at Five Flags Speedway. His team had won the previous five races at Five Flags Speedway, including in 21 and 22 with Sammy Smith behind the wheel. Still really a great run for William. And then a guy we've already talked about on the show.
Bubba Pollard, are you still there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I didn't at first. Okay, I hear you now.
Yep, no worries. And so, yeah, then Bubba Pollard was third in that race, also competed in the ASA Stars National Tour 200 lapper, had an engine failure in that race, and then obviously he's ready to make his Xfinity Series debut that we've already touched on this weekend at Richmond International Raceway.
All right. Now, the next race, for the ARCA Menards Series, it's the General Tire 200 out at Talladega Super Speedway, and that race is going to be televised live on Fox Sports 1 starting at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, and it will be broadcast on select affiliates of the MRN radio network nationwide. So that's pretty cool. I'm glad to see that happening for the ARCA Menards Series. But I also wanted to let you know when the next races are going to be for the ARCA East. Well, I think we already mentioned ARCA East. Yeah, that's the ARCA Menards Series will race April 20th at Talladega Super Speedway. And I believe that is going to be, no, it's not going to be a doubleheader. The ARCA West is racing the same day that they're going to be racing at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. So mark that date on your calendar for two big ARCA races, ARCA Menards and ARCA West, Talladega and Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. The ARCA East, they'll race the next week, April the 26th, out at Dover Motor Speedway, and that race along with the Talladega race will be televised on Fox Sports 1. The ARCA West race will be available via Flow Racing live streaming. So pretty cool there. So I will say Gio Ruggiero had the winning pass. They're calling that the Ricci sweep move of the race from Five Flags Speedway. And you can watch that over at ArcaRacing.com as well. Anything else that you want to touch on there in the ARCA Menards Series?
Not so much I can think of, no. Ready for those seasons to kind of heat up here as we head into the late spring and early summer months where they're almost racing weekly. So we'll have a lot of ARCA action to talk about here coming up starting in April and heading into May.
Okay. Then as we bridge over into our update for the Truck Series, I'm going to play that media interview, it's almost 6 minutes, actually, from Corey Heim after he won last weekend out at, was it Circuit of the Americas? Yeah, after he won last weekend at Circuit of the Americas. So it's 5 minutes and 50 seconds. Let's hear what he had to say, and then Brian and I will comment afterwards.
All right. Oh, sorry. we are now joined by a race winner of the XL 225, Corey Heim, driver of the number 11 Toyota for Tricon Garage. We're going to go ahead and open it up to questions. We'll start up front with Zach.
Zach Sterney, NASCAR.com. Corey, congratulations on this. At what point did you know that you had the truck to compete for this win? Obviously, we saw what Connor did yesterday, and he was sore heading into this. But did you know yesterday that you had a truck to contend with him?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I feel like I knew I had a truck that I was capable of winning before we even unloaded. Just for how fast we were at Mid-Ohio and Coda last year and to dominate the way we did at Mid-Ohio. And then, you know, of course, all road courses run a pretty similar setup. So to come here with that same truck and a really similar setup was, you know, gave me a lot of confidence. I knew that I was capable of getting it done. I just, you know, definitely very surprised by Connor's speed yesterday. But, you know, the whole race put together from there. So a lot of variables, and I knew he was going to be a little bit raw, but he did a great job. So can't take anything away from him.
All right, Jerry.
Jerry Jordan, King of the Paris.net. That was a very exuberant celebration after the race. Does this thing have a special meaning to you, or is it just that cold win here?
Yeah, I was pretty excited. I worked my butt off for this one. You know, with the one race in the whole year and the truck series, I feel like it was just so important for me to prove, you know, my road course ability, and I needed to capitalize on today, and I did. So after it was finally done, after the, you know, two or three, whatever it was, Greenway checkers at the end, I was just so glad it was over and it was time to celebrate. So it definitely means a lot.
Good.
Corey, Tanner Marler here with Front Stretch. All five Tricons today inside the top 10. Talk about how big of a day this was for your entire team.
Absolutely. You know, Tricon Garage, even last year we unloaded with great road course trucks, and, you know, throughout the year I feel like there was a couple things that we could do better, and with the speed that we had last year and to be able to improve on that was pretty special. So, you know, I was really surprised to see us all up there at the end, and I guess more so just avoiding the chaos altogether as an organization was special. But to have that speed, you know, organization-wide was special, but really just shows the hard work and dedication at Tricon Garage and Toyota Racing.
All right, up here in the front.
Rob Kiyonkin from thepodiumfinish.net. Corey, congratulations on your victory. How much of a statement is today's victory considering your strong, consistent start to the season?
Could you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. How much of a statement is this victory today considering your strong start to the year?
That's a big statement for us. I feel like we've really been in contention to win just about every race except for maybe Bristol the other week. And I knew, you know, as I iterated earlier, I feel like it's a big race for us coming here with the only road course on the schedule. So to come here and be fast from the very start, qualify second, and, you know, win a stage and win the race is super big for us and our organization. To start the year off like this, I think we're five races in now. So we have really big goals for this year, and to start like that is pretty special. So someone said real points there as well, and that's a great place to be as well.
All right, back here.
Steven Stump, Frenchers.com. Corey, you dominated today in Juan. You dominated Mid-Ohio. In that regard, how is it kind of disappointing that it's the only road course on the truck schedule this year?
Yeah, when the schedule came out, I think it was September, October, somewhere around there last year, and I saw only one road course, I was super disappointed. I heard rumors that there was going to be up to four. So I think road course racing, especially with the truck series, is just an opportunity to kind of get us out of our box a little bit and showcase some different skill sets. And I put a lot of time and effort into my craft on the road courses, just between iRacing and simulator and just asking, you know, guys who have done it their whole lives how to do it better, I guess. Just to only come here once or one road course once is kind of disappointing, but to capitalize on the one we got, super special.
Any additional questions? Back to it. Yep.
Steven Stump again at Front Stretch. I don't know the story. I don't know if it's something you're aware of. So obviously, you know, first there was, you know, that late restart, then there's another late restart. What's kind of going through your head when there's a caution when you're just about to take the white and it's for a truck losing its entire rear end housing?
Yeah, I heard about that. I haven't seen it yet, but the initial reaction for me is definitely just a deep sigh and disappointment because it's pretty crazy to turn one, but I think I have a great crew around me with Scott Zabidelli and my Tricon Garage 11 crew. They're able to calm me down, and Hirschman up there in turn one as well, just to kind of guide me through it. I wouldn't rather do it with a different group of guys, just having them in my ear and calming me down, making me feel confident for the next restart. Certainly couldn't do it without them.
Thank you.
All right, back up to the front.
Rob Pionson for the podiumfinish.net. Just talking about Scott Cipadelli and your relationship with him, like how much have you felt like he's evolved your racecraft these last couple of years?
For sure. With all of his experience over the past couple of years and being a championship-winning crew chief, you know, when I knew I was going to work with him in 2023 before the start of the 2023 season, I was just super excited to have that experience behind me and knowing for a fact that we will be a race win contending truck. And to have that confidence behind you before the season is great. And to go out there last year and prove that we're capable of winning any given week and to follow it up this year is super special. So, you know, just can't say enough about Scott and really just everyone head to toe in that track on garage team, including my spotters and really just everyone in the fab shop that makes it happen. Just a really, really great group of guys.
Any final questions?
All right. Thank you, Corey. And congrats on your win.
All right. Your thoughts after listening to the interview, Brian?
Yeah, I think the one thing Corey brought up that I kind of forgotten about was that there's only the one road course race on the Truck Series schedule this year. Interesting that he said he had heard there might be up to four before the schedule is released. So I think it's a little bit disappointing from that standpoint that there's only the one. Obviously a dominant performance from him. He'd love to see more than the one. But I think a great win for him, the first win for Toyota this year. Five different winners so far in the Truck Series in five races, but I think good for Toyota to get that win, and I think good for Heim to get that win as well so early on in the year.
Absolutely, and, you know, a lot of people think this is just the beginning. He could go on because he's good not just on the road courses, which we know he's pretty good on, but he's good on a lot of different types of tracks, so I really have a lot of respect for Corey. I think he's a smart racer, and I can't wait to see what he does the rest of this season.
Yeah, and I think this is excitement level, too. It's kind of fun, you know, it's a celebration. They kind of asked about that. He's a guy just, you know, worked really hard for this one, so great to see, and, you know, love to kind of see that level of excitement and success. And I think, yeah, he's, big things have come from him. I think he's, you know, done really well up to the ARCA ranks and getting into the trucks and doing really well as well. So I think he'll always be a contender and a name we're going to hear about for a long time to come.
Without a doubt. All right. Let's go ahead and move over then to our truck series update because, again, they are not racing this weekend, so we will not see them on the track. But we do have a few notes to cover for the truck series, and I want to go to that now. Having a hard time getting to the page, but give me a second, and I'll be there shortly. one of my frustrations this weekend, I was here for a really good reason. My son introduced his book, The Heron's Labyrinth, and I was here for that. But to know that the trucks were on the track, the Xfinity as well as the Cup Series, it was disappointing not to be able to go to the track.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at least you were in, you know, probably some warmer, better weather than we had up here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's an exciting event for sure. But, yeah, COTA looks beautiful every time you see it on TV. So I'm curious to try to make a trip there at some point.
Yeah, too. I want to come here and actually go to the race. I've
yeah.
been at the track twice, but not to see races. It's a really cool track. Well, my son took me there once for a 4th of July celebration. They did fireworks out there. And then we went at Christmas time because they put up a really beautiful Christmas display, and you get to drive on the track to see all the displays that they have there. So that was really cool.
Very nice. Yeah, I've done something like that at Charlotte Motors once, probably 10 years ago now. But, yeah, it's really neat when you can drive through there. Imagine it's even better at COTA being the road course and everything. So, really cool. Yeah, you're going to definitely have to make it there for a race. Maybe that's on your 2024.
Oh, that sounds like a plan. Okay.
write it down.
Okay. Let's talk about the Long John Silver's 200. That's going to be the next Craftsman Truck Series race out at Martinsville Speedway next weekend, Friday, April the 5th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll give you all the details when we get to that preview next Thursday. But for now, we've got a little bit of information that we can share with you as far as notes. So you want to get started then, Brian, with the first one?
Yeah, for sure. So, yep, just five races into the Truck Series season already. Kind of crazy how quick that's gone, and they've only got the 23 race schedule. So they're more than 20% of the way done with their season already, which is kind of crazy to think about. It does feel like it kind of just got started. But they have had five different winners in those five first races. Of course, had Nick Sanchez getting the win at Daytona, Kyle Busch picking up another truck win at Atlanta, Rajah Caruth getting that infamous first Truck Series victory at Las Vegas, Christian Eckes winning at Bristol, and that was 4-for-4 for Chevrolet so far, and then Corey Heim snapping that Chevrolet streak by going to victory lane last weekend at COTA. Interestingly enough, the trucks have been around since 1995, and this is just the fourth time in that time frame that they started the season with five different race winners, as well as five different pole winners through the first five events of a season. That happened in 1996, 2005, and 2012. So something that hasn't happened in the trucks for 12 years now and only happened four times in their series history. And so far this season, they've seen 23 different drivers lead a lap, producing an average of eight different lap leaders per race, which is tied for 2005 for the second most average lap leaders through the first five races in series history, behind only the 2022 season. And Christian Eckes has led the most laps so far this year. Of course, the winner at Bristol, he's led 173. And the first five Truck Series races have generated an average of 16.2 lead changes per race, which is the series record for the most average lead changes through the first five races of the season in series history, beating the previous record of 15.2 set in 2022. So the Truck Series kind of had a couple messy, in my opinion, at least first couple races of the season. But they've kind of turned that around and had some pretty good stuff coming up these last few. And obviously heading to Martinsville for their next race, should be some beating and banging and some good short track in there. It's kind of a bummer the trucks don't get a chance to run at Richmond this weekend with everybody else, but they will be back in action very shortly at Martinsville Speedway.
Absolutely. And talking about different winners and different races, they're on a hot streak at Martinsville with 10 different winners in the last 10 races. So a lot of people are wondering if they continue to uphold the race winner streak that they have going at 10. So the streak is currently second to Bristol Motor Speedway from August of 2014 through March of 2024 for the longest active streak in the Truck Series. So we'll see if they can contend this coming weekend out at Martinsville. The different winner streak, that started in 2017, and that's when Chase Elliott took the checkered flag in the spring race. Then it was Noah Gregson in the fall, John Hunter Nemechek followed that up in 2018 spring race. Johnny Sauter won the fall of 2018. Then in 2019, the spring race, it was Kyle Busch. The fall race, it was Todd Gilliland. In 2020, there was only one race there. Grant Infinger won that race. That was the COVID year. Zane Smith took the win in 2021, and William Byron won there in 2022. So that covers the COVID years. Most recently, it was Corey Heim back in just last year in 2023. So, so far, only two previous winners are entered in Friday's race that will be held under the lights and for 200 laps. So those two drivers include the veteran Grant Infinger from Alabama. He's yet this season to crack the top five with his new team, but he has two top 10 finishes under his belt. The driver of that number nine CR7 Chevrolet has made 11 starts at Martinsville, and he has one win there that came in 2020, three top fives and five top 10s. He's also led 56 laps at that paperclip-shaped track. Then there's the new guy, Corey Heim, the Craftsman Truck Series most recent winner last week at COTA for another breakout year. In two starts, the driver has posted one win that came last year in one top five and one top 10. He hails from Marietta, Georgia, and has led 82 laps. So now the series is going to return there next weekend, and all eyes are going to be on those two drivers to see if they can make another trip to Victory Lane and crack that 10 race streak that they have of different winners. So we'll see what happens.
For sure. And yeah, Heim's victory was part of a banner day for his team Tricon. He beat teammate Taylor Gray to the checkered flag, which was the first 1-2 finish in their team's history. And all five of their trucks placed inside the top 10. Heim with a win, obviously. Taylor Gray in second. Jack Hawksworth came home sixth. Dean Thompson ninth. And Taylor's brother Tanner Gray came home in the 10th position. That OT finish was Heim's sixth win of his career, with three of those wins coming last season. So he's already locked himself into the playoffs. He'll be ready to be a contender again. As we mentioned already, he was dominant at COTA. There were 14 lead changes amongst eight different drivers, but Heim was the only guy to lead double digits. At just 21 years of age, he's finished sixth or better in all five races this season, a feat that no one else in the series has accomplished yet. They've had great consistency so far, and Heim noted during his post-race interviews that he thinks his best tracks are in front of them. So, again, I think he's definitely a favorite to make it to the championship four, and it'll come down to how he performs at Phoenix. Obviously, a long way to go yet in the season, but I know, as we mentioned, he's already a previous winner at Martinsville. He's probably licking his chops, ready to go for Martinsville Speedway coming up shortly.
Okay. Well, after leading the series point standings all season, Tyler Ankrum has some competition. After the first five races, it is a change at the top of the list, with Corey Heim overtaking the lead with 207 points. So Tyler Ankrum is no longer at the top of the list after the first four races. Sitting 10 points back from Heim is Ty Majeski. The San Bernardino native has made two previous starts at Martinsville. His first venture in 2022 netted him a 16th place finish, but when he returned, in 2023, Majeski scored his track best, a fourth place finish. He's 29 years old, and he never led a lap at the short track, but was able to come up with that fourth-place finish. Ankrum, who sat top of the standings for those first four races, well, he's now 11 points back in third place, so it's a pretty tight battle up at the top. He drives that number 16 McAnally Hilgeman Racing Chevrolet. He's made seven starts at Martinsville with only one top 10 finish that came in 2022. So I think this is not the first time we're going to see this. I think we might see this again with the points battle heating up at the top. Either that or Corey Heim is going to take off with it. We'll have to wait and see which direction that goes.
Yeah, I definitely, Heim is my championship favorite thus far. I know it's early, but definitely for Heim for sure. We've got a little bit of Truck Series news that came out this week. Sammy Smith is going to join Spire Motorsports for four races and run in that number 7 Chevrolet truck, that same truck that Kyle Busch took to Victory Lane a few weeks ago at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Smith, of course, is a regular in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and those four races for him are actually going to begin April 5th, the Truck Series next race at Martinsville, and the 19-year-old will also run at North Wilkesboro on May 18th, Indianapolis Raceway Park on July 19th, and the Milwaukee Mile on August 25th. Smith, of course, his full-time job is driving that number 8 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet, where he's got three top 10s in five races already this season and finished 8th earlier this month at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Smith actually hails from Johnston, Iowa, so it's kind of unfortunate they weren't able to slot him into that Iowa race, and I don't want to jump ahead to Xfinity news, but that race is sold out for Xfinity as well coming up at Iowa, so it's pretty cool. Maybe we can touch on that there in our Xfinity portion of the show. Smith made his lone Truck Series start last year's series opener at Daytona International Speedway, where he came home 14th.
All right, and now we'll take a quick look at the Rookie of the Year breakdown. Lane Riggs has really jumped ahead in the lead for that for the Sunoco Rookie of the Year. The driver of the number 38 Front Row Motorsports Ford is the highest finishing rookie contender at COTA. He finished 27th, and right now he's 12 points over Connor Jones, who's at 21 points over Thad Moffitt. So just the three drivers in that competition, Lane Riggs has the most points at 61. So not bad. 21 points between the three drivers. So kind of interesting to see what's happening there.
Yeah, it's always fun to follow the rookie battle. I think going into that, Lane Riggs is probably my favorite to win it, just given that he's in that Front Row Motorsports truck that Zane Smith has had so much success in the past. But a pretty good battle going on between Riggs, Jones, and Moffitt here so far in the early going.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on now to the NASCAR Xfinity Series. The Toyota Care 250. Excuse my frog here. I don't know. I had a hard time getting over my head cold from about a week or so ago. Anyway, the Toyota Care 250 will take place this weekend at Richmond Raceway, Saturday, March the 20th at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1 with pre-race coverage starting at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, as well as on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They're going to race 250 laps to cover a distance of 187.5 miles. First two stages are 75 laps, with stage one ending on lap 75, stage two on lap 150, and then the next stage is 100 laps and will end the race on lap 250. So what do we have here in the Xfinity Series, Brian?
Well, popular program is back for the Xfinity Series, the Dash for Cash, that involves basically a four-race competition, paying out an additional $100,000 bonus to that winner, and that will kick off with this Saturday's Toyota Care 250 at Richmond Raceway. That basically serves as the qualifier race for the first Dash for Cash race this season. In order to qualify, the drivers have to be full-time in the Xfinity Series and declared for Xfinity Series points. With a quick look at this weekend's preliminary entry list, basically everybody in the field would be eligible for that, aside from two Truck Series full-time competitors, and that's two guys we've already talked about on this show, Corey Heim and Taylor Gray. Heim running in that number 26 Sam Hunt Toyota, and Taylor Gray in the number 19 Joe Gibbs Toyota this weekend. Given that they are declared for truck points, that makes them ineligible for the Xfinity Series Dash for Cash. And if you're not familiar with how the Dash for Cash works, or you're new to watching the Xfinity Series, the four highest finishing eligible Xfinity drivers this weekend at Richmond will set the field for that first Dash for Cash race, which will take place on April 6th at Martinsville Speedway. And the next two and the final two races on the Dash for Cash will be April 13th at Texas and April 20th at Talladega Super Speedway. The second and third races in it will be then, and the Dash for Cash will conclude on April 27th at Dover Motor Speedway. It's always a little bit of an exciting kind of additional thing to watch in the Xfinity Series and kind of give some more focus to those full-time drivers, obviously. Not like it was several years ago where we had a bunch of Cup guys running all the time, so it was a lot more Xfinity Series regulars, but a fun little side competition to kind of watch in the early going of the season.
Absolutely, and you know, it is so much fun to see them highlighted with the Dash for Cash program. I think it's a great program. I'm glad to see them bringing it back year after year, and I hope they continue to bring it back for many more years. So I'm definitely going to be watching to see who those top four drivers are. All right, grab your gear because Richmond Raceway is up next for the Xfinity Series. They're going to be racing this weekend, as we indicated earlier. And it's going to be the 78th Xfinity Series race. It's a three-quarter mile track out at Richmond. And the previous 77 races have given fans 39 different race winners and 40 different pole winners. So we'll see what happens this weekend. 16 of the Xfinity Series races at Richmond were won from the pole or that first starting spot. Most recently, Ty Gibbs did it back in 2022. Kevin Harvick leads the series at Richmond in wins. He's got seven, along with 18 top fives and 21 top tens in those starts. And then Kyle Busch holds a few records at the track himself. He's got the most poles there with six. He's also led the most laps at 1,497, and he holds a qualifying record with a speed of 129.248 miles per hour, and that was set all the way back in 2004. Now, the Xfinity Series will have a jam-packed Saturday. They're going to start off with practice at 8:35 in the morning. That's Eastern time, and they'll follow that up with qualifying at 9:05 a.m. Eastern. Practice, qualifying, and the Toyota Care 250 will be broadcast live on Fox Sports 1. So you'll want to get in on all the action this Saturday.
Yeah, and when it comes to the Xfinity Series at Richmond, there's actually only two drivers in this weekend's field that have been to Victory Lane there before, Junior Motorsports' Justin Allgaier and Stewart Haas Racing's Cole Custer. Allgaier, of course, a longtime veteran of the Xfinity Series. He's made 23 starts at Richmond with two wins. Both of those came in 2020 during the COVID times, and has eight top fives, 11 top tens, and has led 496 laps. Cole Custer, meanwhile, last year's Xfinity Series champion, has made eight trips to the three-quarter mile track in the Xfinity Series, has one win that came back in 2019, three top fives, five top tens, and 165 laps led. In 2024, both Allgaier and Custer are looking to get that infamous first victory of the season and lock themselves into the playoffs, but it very well could be likely that we see someone win this weekend at Richmond that has never won at the three-quarter mile track before.
Yes, indeed. All right, we're going to look at the Sunoco Rookie Update again here for the Xfinity Series, and I've got a feeling this one's going to be a runaway because Love is mounting up on the points. With there's five races under their belts, and from our Richard Childress Racing, Jesse Love is still at the top of those points with 166 points. Behind him, though, is from Colleague Racing, Shane Van Gisbergen. He's in second, but he's 58 points back with 108 points total. Other rookie contenders include Leland Honeyman Jr. He's in third at 85 points. Excuse me. And then he's 81 points from the lead. He's followed by Haley Deegan with 51 points. She's 115 points back. And Dawson Cram sits at 24 points at 142 points back. All drivers besides Honeyman are making their track series debuts at Richmond this weekend. Actually, Honeyman made his first Xfinity Series start at Richmond, posting a 25th place finish. And that was... It doesn't say when he made that start, but, oh, it was last season. Yeah, he made that start last season when he posted that 25th place finish. So a lot to watch there for the rookies as well. Jesse Love has done so well in the ARCA Menards Series, winning the championship there last year, and now coming into the Xfinity Series directly with Richard Childress Racing, running away with the Sunoco Rookie of the Year title so far.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised to see that Jesse Love slid so low down in our team's Xfinity Series picks this week. He was still available. I think I was one of the last picks, so happy to grab him and feel pretty good about at least getting him when being one of the last to pick. So pretty excited
yeah,
about that.
That's amazing.
And another story we've touched on, I think, multiple times already, but we'll touch on it one last time in case you haven't heard. Bubba Pollard is making his first ever career Xfinity Series start this weekend. 37 years old, will be behind the wheel of the number 88 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet. Obviously, he's won more than 100 plus late model races in his career. If you follow late model racing, you've heard of him. He's very excited for the opportunity this weekend, but also notes that he doesn't really know what to expect. Everything's very new to him, but he's really thankful for the opportunity with the sponsorship from Ream and Dale Jr. and that team giving him a chance. Never had any laps at Richmond in anything and never driven an Xfinity Series car. So a tall task ahead for Bubba this weekend, but I'm sure he's been doing anything and everything he can prepare, getting some sim work in, all that good stuff. So I think everyone's eyes will be on him to see where he finishes and where things shake out this weekend for Bubba.
Yeah, he's going to be in good equipment with Junior Motorsports and fans are going to have to scratch their head maybe a couple of times trying to figure out who's in that 88 Chevrolet. But I'll tell you now, it's Bubba Pollard. So keep your eye on him. Even though it's his first time, I suspect he's going to fare pretty well, and I can't wait to see what he does. But there's another news announcement that was made. Taylor Gray is going to join Joe Gibbs Racing in Richmond. He normally drives in the Craftsman Truck Series, but he's going to make his Xfinity Series debut this weekend at Richmond Raceway. Gray is going to be behind the wheel of that number 19 for Joe Gibbs Racing in a Toyota. And he's going to be working with crew chief Seth Chatka, I believe is how you pronounce his name. Gray will be the fourth different driver to strap into the number 19 this season. Eric Almirola, Ryan Truex, and Ty Gibbs so far have been behind the wheel of that number 19. And the best finish for the prior three drivers this season was a ninth place finish by Truex, and that came at Atlanta Motor Speedway. So it'll be fun to see what Taylor can do behind the wheel of that number 19 out at Richmond. I think it's a good track for him to make his debut.
Yeah, good track. Great team. Set up as much as you can be for success at that level. So and so those two guys making their Xfinity Series debut. We've got a third driver also making their Xfinity Series debut this weekend. That'll be Morgan Baird behind the wheel of the number 4 JD Motorsports Chevrolet, making his Xfinity Series debut. He most recently ran modifieds with Higher Racing in 2023 and has been running part-time in the ARCA Menard Series with a variety of teams over the past 8 years. Cut his teeth racing go-karts, cup mini cars, and dwarf cars, and has made 13 ARCA Menard Series starts across those years with 3 top 10 finishes. So Baird will join Gray and Pollard in making their Xfinity Series debuts at Richmond on Saturday.
All right. And we've got a couple of milestones coming up here as well, and a couple of, one of those at least, is at Richmond Raceway. Brandon Jones is looking to make his 275th Xfinity Series start at Richmond this weekend. He becomes the 36th different driver to make 275 or more starts in the series. Coming up next weekend in Martinsville, it's Cole Custer. He's going to make his 150th career start at Martinsville. And then further down the road here at Texas Motor Speedway, Riley Herbst, God, I can't believe it's there already. He's going to make his 150th Xfinity Series start at Texas Motor Speedway. So congratulations to all three drivers. Those are big milestones for sure.
Agreed.
All right. Coming up here next is the NASCAR Cup Series. They're going to be racing the Toyota Owners 400 at Richmond on Sunday, March the 31st. Kind of surprising to see them racing on Easter. I'm kind of shocked that they're doing that. But anyway, the time is at 7 p.m. Eastern time, so it's after all the Easter festivities. It'll be in the evening. It will be televised on Fox starting at 6 p.m. with free race coverage. You'll also be able to listen to them on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll race 400 laps to cover a distance of 300 miles. Stage 1 ends on lap 70. The next stage, stage 2, will end on lap 230. And then the final stage ends on lap 400 for the Cup Series. And I know we've got a lot to cover here. So what's on tap here? Talking about Easter weekend.
I will say I do enjoy the later in the evening starts for the Cup Series. I know that's not everyone's cup of tea, but it kind of allows you to go out and enjoy your Sunday and then still come home and sit down and watch some Cup Series racing. So that kind of excites me. I know maybe it's not for everybody, but I do enjoy that, especially as we get into the summer months and you've got a lot of outdoor activities. So, jumping into the Toyota Owners 400 at Richmond. Coverage, of course, will be on Fox, MRN, and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. The last two seasons, in 22 and 23, NASCAR did decide to take that chance and host races on Easter Sunday. As Sharon mentioned, they normally haven't done that in the past. It's always kind of been an off weekend. And both of those races took place at the Bristol Dirt Track. Of course, that experiment ended this year, but they've decided to continue racing on Easter Sundays. Prior to 22, the last time the Cup Series raced on Easter Sunday was also at Richmond Raceway back in March of 1989. So it's been quite the time since they've done Easter at Richmond. And that actually was rescheduled to that date after being snowed out from its original date in February, and that race was won by none other than NASCAR Hall of Famer Rusty Wallace. And there's only been two other occasions in NASCAR history where they've raced on Easter Sunday, and that was way back in the 50s, 1953 at Charlotte Motor Speedway and 1954 at Orange Speedway in Hillsboro. So kind of a rare occurrence, but it sounds like something that they're going to keep trying. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I feel like the ratings did decently. I don't know if that was because of the Bristol Dirt experiment or because people are kind of, you know, around in that evening and enjoying time with family and friends and put the race on and whatnot. So interesting to see how the ratings do. They've obviously been up kind of across the board so far in a lot of motorsports so far this year. So pretty excited to kind of see how that goes, and I enjoy that. I'll be looking forward to watching that.
All right. Six races in now for the Cup Series competition. And I tell you what, the competition level is really high this year with the parity that they have in that series. So far this season has been filled with some unpredictable finishes and premium on-track competition, giving us five different winners in six races. I think William Byron was the first to double up on wins so far this season. So we've also seen five different points leaders through the first six races as well. Right now, I think it's Joe Gibbs Racing's Martin Truex Jr. at the top of the standings. He sits there just 5 points over his teammate, Ty Gibbs, who sits in second. So Gibbs now in his sophomore year. So it's really cool to see him doing so well in the series, because a lot of times we see sophomore drivers kind of nosedive a bit in their second year. Not the case for Ty Gibbs, which I think a lot of people did predict. This season, the Cup Series has produced an average of 13 lap leaders per race in the first six races. That's tied with 2011 for the series' most average number of lap leaders through those first six races. Of the modern era, that's from 1972 to the current year. Now, the Cup Series is also averaging 31.33 lead changes per race through those first six races. That's behind only the 2011 season that had 31.5. The 24 season has also given us 503 green flag passes for the lead. That's the most through the first six races of the year since the inception of that stat in 2005. That surpasses the previous record of 378 green flag passes for the lead through the first six races set in 22. Now, we also have a total of, for green flag passes, that sits at 32.204, the series most through the first six races since the inception. That surpasses the previous record at 30,451, just to put it into perspective. The total green flag passes for through the first six races was set last year, so they certainly topped that this year. The overtime finish in the Cup Series since 2005, the 24 season is just the second year, and the first six races of the schedule did not finish with overtime joining the 21 season. So that's pretty cool. You like to see that. And this weekend, Richmond Raceway is expected. The competition stats will keep continuing to progress. Last season, the Spring Richmond Cup Series race set a new track record for green flag passes for the lead. That was set at 35, and both races last season set the highest two total green flag pass records on short tracks in the series at 3,816 in the spring and 3,909 in the fall. That's just ahead of the 24 Bristol Motor Speedway race just a few weeks ago. where they came in at third most at 3,589. So a lot of stats that prove the fact that the racing has been highly competitive for sure.
Yeah, I think everyone's kind of excited to see, you know, how things play out. It'll be another chance for that package to run at Richmond this weekend. So, you know, obviously didn't quite get the results that people were hoping for at Phoenix, but I'm very excited to see how that goes this weekend for sure. One guy off to a hot start already in 2024 is none other than William Byron, the only driver thus far in the series to win more than once. Obviously winning the Daytona 500 and then going to victory lane last weekend at Circuit of the Americas. Five different winners in six races so far this year, so definitely a variety, and five guys already locked in to the playoffs. But obviously with those two wins already and as good as Byron and crew chief Rudy Fugel have been, one of the early championship favorites for sure. They've got two top fives, three top tens, and a pole. Looking into Richmond this weekend, maybe they don't have the best numbers there thus far in the past with 11 starts, one top five, two top tens, and an average finish of 15.9. And a very interesting stat to me was that was obviously a great weekend for Hendrick Motorsports. Last weekend, they also went to victory lane with Kyle Larson in the Xfinity Series race, driving that number 17 Chevrolet for the team. They don't run a ton in the Xfinity Series, but they are running 10 races this year with a part-time car. And the last time that they won multiple NASCAR National Series races at the same track in the same weekend happened all the way back in 2007 at Phoenix, where they won in the Cup and the Xfinity Series in November 10th and 11th of 2007. So great weekend for Hendrick Motorsports. William Byron's off to a hot start and obviously one of the championship favorites, no doubt, heading in to Richmond and the seventh race of the 2024 season.
All right. Let's talk about short track racing at Richmond. NASCAR prepares for close beating and banging type racing as fans love the short tracks like Richmond. It was originally known as Atlantic Rural Exposition Fairgrounds. They held their first race back in 1946 as a half-mile dirt track. So that's kind of interesting, one of the oldest tracks in NASCAR. The first Cup NASCAR race at Richmond was held in April 19th. That was in 1953. It was won by the Hall of Famer Lee Petty in a Petty Enterprises Dodge with an average speed of 45.535 miles per hour. The track surface was changed at Richmond from dirt to asphalt between the races in 1968. And in total, Richmond has hosted the Cup Series 134 times, giving us 58 different pole winners and 54 different race winners. So a lot of history there at Richmond Raceway.
Yeah, no doubt. And something new coming to Richmond this weekend, as I mentioned, in 2024, NASCAR has a new package for the short tracks and the road courses. They collaborated with drivers and teams over the off season and announced a few changes to the short track and road course package. When it comes to the short tracks, that didn't include the Coliseum, Bristol, or Dover, but it does include all of the road courses as well as Richmond this weekend. And just quick details on those components. 2023 short track and road course splitter stuffers, no engine panel strakes, the 3-inch spoiler, and kind of the big change is that simplified diffuser that they are running as well. So as I mentioned, it didn't quite get the results at Phoenix. I think people didn't really seem to like that race all that much, but hopefully it has a little bit of a different effect when it comes to Richmond this weekend on Sunday night.
All right. Starting on the pole does have an incentive for drivers out at Richmond Raceway. The first starting spot is the most proficient starting position for the Cup Series field at the track. They produce more winners than any other starting spot on the grid, with 24 victories in 134 races. That's just at 18.18%, so that's pretty stout. A total of 15 different drivers have won the Cup Series race at Richmond from the pole or the first starting position. They're led by Richard Petty, of course, who has six wins there. Richard Petty, of course, is a Hall of Famer. He has those 6 wins coming in 61, 67, 68, 69, 70. He had a sweep there, 74 and 75. Bobby Allison had a 72 sweep, 73 sweep, and then he also won in 74, 76, 79, and 82. They lead the Cup Series in poles at Richmond with 8 apiece. Now, 8 of the 58 Cup Series pole winners are active this weekend, and that's led by Denny Hamlin, who has 3 poles at the track, those coming in 2006, 08, and again in 2016. There's 2 drivers with 2 poles. That's Brad Keselowski. He had his poles come in 19 and 14. Joey Logano swept the poles in 2015. Then several drivers here who have 1 pole at the track dating from 2018 to 2023. We'll start with Martin Truex Jr. in 2018, moving on to Kyle Busch. Actually, it dates back to 2010. Kyle Busch had his in 2010, and then consecutively from 2022 to 2023, you've got Ryan Blaney, Kyle Larson, and Tyler Reddick. Only 3 active drivers have been able to win the pole from that first starting spot, and, of course, they include Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, and Denny Hamlin. So we've got some kings on short tracks, though. The Richmond edition kings, that is.
Yeah, and the king of Richmond is no other than the king himself, NASCAR Hall of Famer Richard Petty. He leads in NASCAR Cup Series wins at the track with a whopping 13, that first one coming in the spring of 1961. In several years, he swept both races, 67, 71, 72, and 73, so the early 70s were all about the king. So a total of 13 wins there, with his last one coming in the spring of 1975. And that 13 number is actually the 3rd most wins by a single driver at a single track in series history. If you're wondering what the most is, that number is 15, and that was set at Martinsville and North Wilkesboro. And that record also set by none other than the King Richard Petty himself at 15. Amongst the active drivers in the field, none other than Kyle Busch is the leader with 6 victories. Those coming in the springs of 2009, 2010, 2011, and 2012. And then in 2018, he swept the races at Richmond International Raceway. 8 of the 54 NASCAR Cup Series Richmond race winners are active in the field this weekend. The defending winner of this race is Kyle Larson in that number 5 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet. And the winner of the fall race last fall was none other than RFK Racing's Chris Buescher. As I mentioned, Kyle Busch has the most with 6 wins. Denny Hamlin has 4 wins at Richmond. Martin Truex Jr. with 3. Kyle Larson with 2. Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano also with 2. And Chris Buescher and Alex Bowman with 1 win apiece. So very small faction of drivers there, but I definitely feel like Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin are probably 2 of the favorites, along with Kyle Larson, heading into this weekend. As I mentioned, Chris Buescher will look to defend his win last fall at Richmond.
Okay, now all the track action is going to begin this Saturday, March the 30th, again with practice at 10:35 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. Eastern Time. That'll be immediately followed by the Busch Light Pole qualifying from 11:15 to 12:30 p.m. Eastern. And then both events, as we mentioned earlier, will be broadcast on Fox Sports 1 as well as MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. But Colleague has tapped Ty Dillon for 5 Cup Series races this season. So they announced that earlier this week. He's going to start his season, Ty Dillon, with Colleague Racing at Richmond Raceway in the number 16 Chevrolet for Colleague Racing. And then he's going to have a limited number of starts for the remainder of the season. A lot of people know Ty Dillon as the grandson of Hall of Famer team owner Richard Childress. He's currently competing for the Craftsman Truck Series title for Team Rackley War. So I know he's pretty excited about all of that. In addition to Richmond, Dillon is looking to run the number 16 Chevrolet at Texas Motor Speedway on April the 14th, then again at New Hampshire Motor Speedway on the 23rd of June. In August, he'll race at Richmond on the 11th, and then Kansas Speedway on September the 29th. So pretty excited to see Ty get this opportunity. Hopefully he'll make the most of it, and we'll see good things from him. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. Solid equipment with Colleague, for sure. So good opportunity for Ty. Obviously, he's bounced around a little bit here of late, so good to see him get a five-race opportunity with Colleague. And as we head to Richmond, we've got some former champions that have had some pretty long winless streaks that we'll be looking to snap them this weekend at Richmond that have won before at Richmond. One of those is Brad Keselowski. We think it's pretty well known. He's been on a pretty long winless streak that's got up to 104 races, with his last win coming at Talladega in April of 2021. A couple drivers that I'm surprised their winless streak has gotten that long. Coming up next, Chase Elliott. He hasn't won since 2022 at Talladega, 47 races for the former Cup Series champion and the well-known, most popular driver. I was surprised to see that one, and this one I knew about a few weeks ago, but it's up in the 30s now as well, and that's Joey Logano. He hasn't won in 37 races since Atlanta in March of 2023. So Chase and Joey, it's been a long time since they've been to Victory Lane. That's a little bit surprising to me. And next on that list is Kyle Busch. He hasn't won since Gateway in June of 2023, 27 races. He kind of started off pretty hot with RCR last year, getting some early wins in the season, and then it's been a little bit of a dry spell for Kyle in that number 8 Chevrolet with RCR. And Martin Truex Jr. also hasn't won in 22 races since July of 2023 in Loudon, so he will look to put that number 19 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota into Victory Lane as well. A couple other former champions that are also riding winless streaks, albeit not that long. Ryan Blaney, seven races since he won at Martinsville in October of 23, and Kyle Larson, what a long winless streak for this guy. Three races since he last won in Las Vegas back in March. Five of the seven champions looking for a win are former Richmond Cup Busch, Truex, Larson, Keselowski, and Logano. So had some success there in the past. I definitely feel like, you know, Brad's obviously kind of bounced around from Penske and over to RFK now. That winless streak isn't as surprising to me, but Chase Elliott, Joey Logano, been with their teams for a while, and really a long drought for both of them, I think, looking to get back to Victory Lane this weekend.
Yeah, there are some surprises there for sure. And one of those drivers could win this weekend and kind of break that winless streak. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. All right, coming up is our Sunoco Rookie of the Year update, and Hosovar continues to lead the rookie class through the first six races this season. From Fire Motorsports, he's 18 points over Stewart Haas Racing's Josh Berry, who sits in second place. So behind Berry and Hosovar is Kaz Grala at 65 points and Zane Smith at 59 points. So this weekend, Hosovar, Kaz Grala, and Zane Smith are all making their track series debuts at Richmond Raceway. For Josh Berry, he made his Cup Series track debut at Richmond last spring, substituting for the injured Chase Elliott, who was out for seven races. He was behind the wheel of that number 9 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet. He started 30th, but he ended up finishing second. So Josh Berry just might close the gap there this weekend in the Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings.
And we got some charity stuff coming up at Richmond this weekend as well. Track laps for charity benefiting the Richmond Raceway Cares and the Special Olympics Virginia. That was postponed from scheduled March 27th due to potential inclement weather, and that has actually been rescheduled now for Wednesday, April 10th. So a little bit disappointing if you're heading to Richmond this weekend, heading to town for the race. That won't occur until Wednesday, April 10th. But all other events are on schedule for the Toyota Owners 400 weekend at Richmond kicking off. And I think that'll be great to get those track laps in for charity as well. Disappointing that they couldn't get that done this weekend. But obviously with the weather,
can't really control that. But what that does is it gives fans the opportunity to make a lap around Richmond Raceway in their own car, five laps actually, for a donation of $20. It benefits those charities. So really cool opportunity event if you're going to be in the Richmond Raceway area on Wednesday, April 10th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Definitely head over and check that out. You must be 18 years of age and have a valid license. They're not just going to allow anybody out there on the track and obviously have to adhere to all laws and speed limits and all that good stuff. But if you're heading out there, have a great time, post some pictures and tag us in them and let us see it. You can register for that at richmondraceway.com/tracklaps and learn more about Richmond Raceway Cares at richmondraceway.com/richmondracewaycares.
Very good. It is disappointing when something like that has to be postponed. But I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people because it's really special when you can take your own car out there on the racetrack and support a charity as special as this one. So I think if you got a chance to get out there, it's a good time to do it. Okay. Now, there's some other milestones to watch for here. And several drivers are going to reach milestones this weekend. Let's start with Joey Logano. He's going to make his 550th Cup Series career start at Richmond this weekend. He becomes the 39th driver to reach 550 more Cup starts. The most recent winner, Chris Buescher, is expected to make his 300 NASCAR Cup Series career start at Richmond this weekend. Under the wins category, Martin Truex Jr., if he's able to win this weekend at Richmond, he'll tie Brad Keselowski for 24th on the all-time Cup Series list. We've been kind of watching for this one. They're both tied at 35 wins. So if he wins this weekend, he'll be able to tie Brad Keselowski for those 35 wins. Also, Kyle Larson wins another race this season. He'll reach 25 career wins, becoming the 36th different driver all time to reach 25 victories or more. And Wood Brothers, they've been sitting at 99 wins this season, and they're looking to make their 100th NASCAR Cup Series victory as quickly as possible. You never know, it might be at Richmond this weekend. But all three of those two drivers and one organization are looking for their next win, and they hope it comes this weekend.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm kind of staying on the statistical categories. I'm through six races this season. We can kind of take a look at how those numbers have all shaken out for everybody. There's been five different championship point standing leaders. Kyle Larson's the only driver to lead the points following more than one race this season. Currently, Martin Truex Jr. holds that top spot after Circuit of the Americas. As mentioned a little bit earlier, there's been five different race winners this season. William Byron's the only guy to go to victory lane twice. Daniel Suarez picked up that win in Atlanta. Larson won at Vegas. Christopher Bell took the victory at Phoenix. And Denny Hamlin, of course, won at Bristol. When it comes to laps led, we've had 29 different drivers lead a lap so far this season. Most laps led has been by Denny Hamlin. He's been out front for 275 of the 1,607 laps completed this year. That's 17.11% of the laps led by the driver of the number 11, Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. Most races led also goes to Denny Hamlin. He's actually the only driver to lead a lap in all six races thus far, and Truex has done it in five of the six. Coming to runner-up finishes, six different drivers have actually finished runner-up in the first six races. Bowman at Daytona, Ryan Blaney in Atlanta, Tyler Reddick at Las Vegas, Chris Buescher at Phoenix, Martin Truex Jr. at Bristol, and Christopher Bell last weekend at COTA. And top fives, four different drivers have finished in the top five three times in the first six races. Alex Bowman, Christopher Bell, Ryan Blaney, and a driver that hasn't been mentioned yet in this section, Ty Gibbs. And only one driver this season has finished in the top 10 in five of the six races, and that's none other than Ty Gibbs. Ty's been off to a really solid start this season. His only finish outside the top 10 came at Daytona, where he finished 17th. Truex is actually the only driver to finish on the lead lap in every single race this season, completing 100% of those 1,600 and laps 1,607 laps run. I can't speak numbers this morning. And the top three drivers ranked in driver rating, which we all love to take a look at, actually are all from the Joe Gibbs Racing Organization. Denny Hamlin with a 104.5, Martin Truex Jr. with a 102, and Ty Gibbs with a 97.3. So some surprises in there, but I think a lot of it kind of leads to what we've seen so far this season. I definitely feel like we've seen a lot of different drivers' names and faces up front. You know, Suarez getting a win, not a guy we see win all the time. JGR with two drivers getting a win already. Larson running strong. William Byron doing really well. I think a lot of good variety, and I think we're really in shape for a good season, and I think the ratings have shown that. They've been up every week as well. So a lot of good stuff coming, and excited to watch Richmond on Sunday night. Still there, Sharon?
Sorry about that. I was on mute.
Oh, okay. No worries.
We haven't given our draft picks yet, so I know you always give the DraftKings odds, and I'll give the box scores. I'll start with the Xfinity Series real quick if you want to know who has the best box scores at Richmond. We'll start, there's quite a few in the Xfinity Series, six different drivers over 100, starting with Brandon Jones at 100.4. He just barely makes the list there. His average finish at the track sits, though, at 17.0. Next up is Cole Custer, has a box score of 105.3 with an average finish at 5.0, which is pretty good. But above him is A.J. Allmendinger. He has an average finish at 4.0 with a box score of 115.0. The next three drivers are John Hunter Nemechek. I'm not sure if John's in this race or not, but he's got an average finish of 2.0 with a box score at 118.9. And then Ty Gibbs, who I know is not in the race this weekend because I picked him at first and then realized he wasn't on the entry list. He has an average finish at 1.0, the only race he raced there, and has a box score of 134.7. Chandler Smith is going to be on the entry list this weekend. He also has an average finish of 1.0 and a box score at 138.3 in one race. Of those six drivers, two of them have two races listed for their stats. Then one is Brandon Jones. The other is John Hunter Nemechek with two races to develop or the odds.
Yeah, great question. So as of this morning on the DraftKings Sportsbook, they've got the favorite to win in the Toyota Care 250 NASCAR Xfinity Series race on Saturday afternoon is Chandler Smith with 3-1 odds. Series veteran Justin Allgaier is second at plus 425. Cole Custer, third at 5-1 odds. Eric Almirola, making a spot start for Joe Gibbs Racing, is plus 650 or 6.5-1. Sheldon Creed is 9-1, and A.J. Allmendinger is 13-1. So those are kind of your favorites. A couple other drivers we've mentioned throughout the show, Riley Herbst and Jesse Love, as well as Austin Hill, are all at 14-1, and Sam Mayer is at 16-1. And since we've talked about his debut a lot, if you're kind of wondering, Bubba Pollard is 22-1, surprisingly kind of a little bit to me, at least ahead of Brandon Jones at 28-1. So those are your favorites heading into this weekend based on the DraftKings Sportsbook odds as of this morning.
All right. I'm going to cover a little bit differently for the Cup Series because when I look at the box scores for the Cup Series, there's only one driver who exceeds 100 driver rating at Richmond Raceway, and that is Denny Hamlin. He sits at 110.0. with an average finish at 6.8. But there are some other drivers who have an average finish that rank, that rank in that 10 or below range. So I'm going to take a look at who those drivers are. Starting with Martin Truex Jr., his average finish sits at 7.3, his box score at 98.9, and he is second on the list. Third on the list is Joey Logano at 8.5 average finish and a box score at 98.5. Then we go down to Kyle Larson. His average finish sits at 9.8. His box score, though, let's see if I can run this across. His box score sits at 95.8. But we've got some other drivers that have some pretty good average finishes that are better than that, starting with, let's see, average finish. Christopher Bell is at 8.0. Then you've got Kyle Busch at 8.8. And then the best average finish of all the drivers on the list is the guy who won last year. He didn't win. He came in second last year, and that's Josh Berry. He's got a 2.0 average finish in just one race. His driver rating sits at 82.6. All the other drivers that I mentioned, though, I think most of them have four races to back up their box score and their average finish. So pretty interesting stats there for Richmond Raceway. Denny, no secret there that Denny Hamlin leads the list.
Yeah, and DraftKings Sportsbook would agree. Taking a look at the odds for the Toyota Owners 400 on Sunday, Denny Hamlin does lead, tied with Christopher Bell on the odds as of this morning. Both of those drivers are at plus 425, followed very closely by their Joe Gibbs Racing teammate, Martin Truex Jr., at plus 600, and Ty Gibbs at plus 850. So the sportsbook loves JGR this weekend, as the four favorites all drive for the organization. And the next two up, Kyle Larson, 9-1, and William Byron at 11-1. So Hendrick Motorsports next. And then we got Chris Buescher at 11-1 with RFK Racing. Obviously, the winner last fall, so that kind of makes sense. Brad Keselowski at 12-1, as we mentioned. He hasn't won in 104 races, but his odds to go to victory lane at Richmond Raceway are better than both Tyler Reddick, Ryan Blaney, and Kyle Busch, who are all lumped in at 15-1. Chase Elliott at 17-1, also looking, as we mentioned earlier, to snap that winless streak. Ross Chastain and Joey Logano are both at 20-1. Bubba Wallace at 35-1. Those are your odds on favorites at DraftKings Sportsbook as we head to Richmond International Raceway this weekend.
All right. So sounds pretty good. I'm pretty excited about that. Okay, it sounds like we have concluded all the information that we have available for us for our presentation today. So now we'll be ready for a hot topic sound off. It sounds like Mike Rozelle indicated that he can't be here. I'm assuming that Andy is also working and unable to be on the show. He didn't respond. And I know Tommy works during the day, and I know he can't make it either. And we know that Jay's pretty occupied with what he's doing with his ministry. So it sounds like it's going to be just you and me, Brian, for Hot Topics.
Sounds like no one else wants to hang out with us today. Huh? Sometimes we got a full panel, and sometimes we got nobody. So.
Yep, it happens that way sometimes. So where do you want to start for Hot Topics today?
That's a great question. I mean, I think first we touched on a little bit during the show, and maybe it's not as much of a hot topic. I just think it's pretty cool, but they announced this week that the NASCAR Xfinity Series race at Iowa Speedway is sold out. They announced several weeks ago that the Cup race is already sold out. So both of those races are sold out for that weekend coming up in June this summer. I'm very excited about that. Obviously, I've been very passionate about Iowa Speedway, covered a lot of races there. A lot of passionate fans there. They really tried to get a Cup race for so long, and they finally got one this year. And I'm really excited to see that seems to be going so well. Hy-Vee signed on to be a partner with them and sponsor the Xfinity Series race as well. They've done a ton for IndyCar at Iowa Speedway, making that a big, huge weekend with concerts and stuff like that, and really trying to enhance the overall fan experience and make it a destination for the entire weekend in addition to just the race. So I think it's really great, and it's awesome to see that it's gotten so much fan support early on, because I do know that over the last several years, the Xfinity Series race attendance kind of dwindled off at Iowa Speedway, as well as for the trucks and ARCA. And it's a little bit disappointing, but I think, you know, people had kind of given up hope that they would get a Cup race and didn't think we'd see any racing at Iowa Speedway anymore there for a bit of time as well. And now we've got IndyCar back with a doubleheader weekend. Now we've got the Cup Series coming. Xfinity race also sold out. ARCA's running there as well.
as part of a triple header weekend that weekend. So super excited to see what that that weekend will produce.
All right. I am super excited about this as well. I've always said I didn't understand why more people weren't coming to Iowa. All they had to do was schedule the Cup Series race, and people showed up. You build it, and they will come, and they did.
Exactly.
So with the sold out races, was it the Cup or the Xfinity?
Both are sold out now. So they announced the Cup was sold out a few weeks ago, and then yesterday they announced that the Xfinity Series race is also sold out. I know the detractors will talk about, you know, it's a fairly small track, and, yeah, I believe it only holds about 30,000, so it's definitely one of the smaller ones. And I thought I saw yesterday they're not planning to bring any additional temporary seating. But, you know, hey, a sold-out track is going to be a great atmosphere, whether it's 30,000 or 80,000 people. I think it'll be a really great environment. I think hopefully a hard-to-get ticket. And, you know, going forward, we'll see that race there for years to come.
Absolutely. I am, like I say, I'm so super excited about it because this track is a great track. It produces great racing. And it's easily accessible right off of I-80. And so fans can come from just about anywhere and be able to get to that track very easily. It's a great little facility. You and I have both covered races there. And I think it's a very good environment for a racetrack to be. And Rusty Wallace is the owner, I think, of that track. They did a good job putting this track together. And I know we're going to see some great racing. The one thing that's been missing from Iowa Speedway has been the Cup Series. And the fact that they decided this year to bring them to Iowa Speedway, I think, was an excellent decision. And I can't wait to see them racing. I think fans, whether you're watching on TV or you're right there at the racetrack, I think you're going to love the racing that you see at Iowa Speedway. And I'm super excited about the fact that they're going to be there this week, or not this week, but this year. So
I wish it was this week. I'm ready. Might be a little cold.
Yeah, it might be a little cold this year, this weekend. But it will be warm when they race this summer. So just drink lots of water and make sure you're hydrated, and you're gonna be in for some great racing at Iowa Speedway, no doubt about it.
Yeah, that is the point. It does get very, very, very toasty there in those summer months for sure. But if that track's gotten great and worn out, nice and bumpy, I think it's going to make cars hard to handle and lead to some really, really good racing.
Now, how do you think – are they going to run the short track package there?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it's every track less than a mile. So that is a little bit of a wild card, I guess, when it comes to the Cup Series. We'll see how that package continues to race. I don't think we should judge it just by what we saw at Phoenix. Give it a little bit of time and see what happens. But, yeah, I think it should be interesting. I know the Xfinity Series has put on some banger races there. Bell, Eric Jones, some of those guys back when they were running the Xfinity Series, some really great stuff. Allgaier with a really great battle. I think it was with Bell the one year, 2018, something like that. So a lot of good racing there. Trucks have run there before too, ARCA obviously as well. So I'm pretty excited to see what it'll produce.
Yeah, it should be noted too, there's a new track president at Iowa Speedway as well, Eric Peterson. This will be his entree, if you will. There's going to be the ARCA Menards Series race on Friday, June the 14th, the Xfinity Series race on Saturday, and the Cup Series race on Sunday. So super excited to have a new track president there for that historic weekend, and to have three big races at the track to include the ARCA Menards Series that weekend. So a lot to look forward to. What's our next hot topic, Brian?
Yeah, I guess next we can kind of jump to last weekend at Circuit of the Americas. NASCAR came out and said that there's some work to be done after dozens of penalties were called at COTA. There were 40 penalties throughout the weekend between the three series for shortcutting the course over Cup, Xfinity, and trucks. And I don't think anybody from teams, drivers, fans, or NASCAR series officials want to be seeing that. So they've talked about how they're going to look at some changes before going back to COTA next year.
Yeah. Were the offenders the same people in all of those penalties, or was it spread out throughout the field?
I think it was pretty much just kind of across the board, you know, even like Chase Elliott, they tried to push back on the number nine team saying, you know, that he wheel hopped, something happened there. He got loose and wheel hopped. He wasn't really trying to cut the corner, you know, and they had Elton Sawyer on NASCAR Series XM earlier this week. And, you know, so basically it's kind of coming down to these balls and strikes calls, if you will, to give a baseball reference. And that's not really something they're looking to do and things like that. So they're really trying to see what they can maybe do with curbing and things like that. They want to take a much deeper dive into the facility to manage, you know, some of the shortcutting that happens in the S's. Obviously, you know, nobody wants to see a bunch of penalties. Thankfully, it didn't really kind of affect the late stages of the race, but obviously that can, you know, really alter a driver and team's day. And it's also got to be pretty hard for NASCAR to try to catch each and every one of those penalties. And then it kind of comes down to, you know, they miss one and that becomes a deal and things like that. But they obviously haven't announced for sure the schedule next year, but all indications are that they'll be back at Circuit of the Americas once again. So I think they'll definitely try to take a look at that and see what else they can do. I think it's, you know, I think where I struggle is, I don't really know what the right answer is there, because if you try to put in more curbing and stuff like that, people are hitting it and tearing up their cars. That's not really what we want either. You know, but it definitely seemed all over the place with kind of what it was. And I think it makes it hard, at least for those of us like watching at home, like understand what is a penalty, what isn't a penalty, you know, and how all that goes down. So I think they're trying to, you know, make that a little bit more clear and concise and figure all that out before they return next year to the 20-turn, 3.41-mile layout in Texas.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree that that's probably way too many penalties for one race. And NASCAR is going to take a look at it, and I applaud them for doing that. I guess they said the reason they were calling it in the S's, I'm just reading because I have to be honest, I did not see the races this weekend. But Sawyer noted that by running straight through the S's, a driver could lower their lap time compared to a driver who goes correctly through that portion of the course. So shortcutting the corners was penalized because of the advantage that could be gained. I guess people were saying that the penalties were not called for other parts of the track, but that was called through the S's, and that was the explanation given by NASCAR as to why. So Sawyer continued on. He said that NASCAR did not issue penalties for going off course in turn one at COTA because there's no lap time there. There's no lap time gained there. If there was lap time to be gained, we would have to do it. The reason a lot of times they get out there, they get pushed out there. So there's a little bit of difference there and a little finessing there from NASCAR's point of view on why they call it in some parts of the track and not in other parts of the track. They're going to look at it. I think they agree that it's too much as well, and that that's why they're looking at it more closely to look and see what they have to do. Now, there might be some upcoming penalties coming, though, because they noted that Justin Haley's car was one of two that were selected at random to be inspected after the Cup race. That's when they found that he was underweight, under the minimum weight, and was disqualified in that race. That was already announced. Sawyer noted the teams are allowed to be within 0.5% of the 3,400-pound weight to meet the weight requirements. Haley's car was lighter than that minimum weight. So I don't know if they will penalize him any further on that, but they did take his car back to the R&D center to take a look at it and see what's going on there. And then he also addressed the rear end housing that came off of Marco Andretti's truck in Saturday's race. So Sawyer said that NASCAR has the rear end housed for further inspection as well. So they're looking at that as well. So NASCAR, I'm glad I'm not them when it comes to penalties and being on top of all of these things. As we know, drivers are going to take every little inch they can get because the competition is so tight. So they've got a big job in front of them, and it's not easy. But it sounds like they're doing their due diligence. What do you think, Brian?
That whole rear end coming off of Andretti's truck was crazy. I don't even know how something like that happens. Like I said, they'll take a kind of look at that. Like something obviously wasn't bolted on or put on as good as it needed to be, I would think. I don't know. But that was nuts to see. Obviously, yeah, people haven't seen videos out there circulating around all over social media. But, yeah, the whole rear end housing coming off the truck like that was pretty wild for sure. Yeah, and I think I'm guessing there's going to be some sort of further penalties there. Maybe not, but, you know, probably a little bit more investigation to see if it's something that the team missed or is maybe just a complete heart failure from that standpoint as well. But that was wild. I think you think you've seen everything in motorsports, and you're like, oh, I've never seen something like that before. So interesting.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe more penalties there as well, but since this is Thursday and we haven't heard of any penalties, I'm guessing maybe they decided that it was not something that was done with dubious intentions. So it didn't sound, I guess we're not going to see any other penalties unless they find something later that they'll announce. But so far, there have not been any further penalties. So that's good news. Okay, but now I know Jay said something here, too, and I'll go ahead and represent Jay with his comment. He says rules are rules. Drivers will push and take every inch given, then try to take another foot or two. I don't see the problem. But 30-some cup drivers didn't get penalized. Four did. So he's saying only four drivers got penalized. The Days of Thunder quote, there are 30 other vultures out there not burning up their tires or cutting the course, in parentheses he put. So his point of view is if so many of the drivers are following the rules and not cutting those corners, then how come the four that did get penalized can't seem to do it? So I don't know. I didn't see the race, so I'm just giving his perspective. So any thoughts on Jay's comments?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess it's a fair point. I thought there were maybe a few more drivers involved in that level of penalties. But I think when you kind of look at it across the series, still, you know, 40 across is a lot, I think. And I think the other point, and it's obviously hard to see because you're only limited to what the broadcast sees, but from what I was seeing on social media and stuff like that, people that were either at the track or watching some of the driver feeds thought there were more things that were a penalty or not, right? Like, I think even as we sit there and watch as fans, we don't necessarily understand, all right, what is and what isn't. So maybe a little bit more clarification on that. I don't know, maybe the broadcast could do a little bit better job at being a little bit more clear on that. It's obviously hard to catch everything at a large road course, but I think it's just something that – I don't know if there's a right answer, honestly, though, too, because, I mean, like you said, at Jay's point, like – drivers and teams are going to do whatever they can to gain not even an inch, like a millionth of an inch in a lot of cases, right? Or even when you look at Haley's car being underweight, I'm sure it was like a tenth of a pound outside whatever the tolerance is. I'm sure it was something probably pretty small and minuscule and something that wasn't necessarily intentional, just trying to get as close as you could and, you know, you're under. So I think, like you said, everyone's going to push the envelope as much as they possibly can to still try to play within the rule book. And you know, once they do certain things, NASCAR will implement other rules and teams will find ways to be able to skirt and get those manipulated or, you know, do what they can to gain every little bit of advantage. The fields are just so tight these days. It's just nuts.
Brian?
Yeah.
Where do you want to go next? No, I heard.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, just looking for the next hot topic.
comes up quick when there's only two of us and we both got to keep picking back and forth, doesn't it?
Yeah. Why don't we talk about NASCAR having Long Beach in their sights?
Yeah, I think that's a great one. That is interesting. I mean, obviously, IndyCar's race at Long Beach for a number of years. Great race to watch
awesome environment and stuff like that. I think it'd be kind of cool to see NASCAR go there and run that and do something different, right? I think they're always looking for something to still stay in that California market. There's rumors that the Clash won't be back at the Coliseum. There's obviously Auto Club is being demolished more and more even as we speak. So they're looking for something there. I think that could be a good option. I think on the only thing I'm concerned about is I just don't want to see a ton of, you know, more road courses and street races, right? I think what makes, you know, Chicago great is it's the only street race, right? Cool, they did this. This is awesome, right? But I think it's, you obviously always looking for the next big thing, the next thing to make it interesting, right? They tried Bristol Dirt. That didn't work. They tried the Coliseum. I feel like that worked really well, better than a lot of people thought, but then that kind of tailored off quickly. So I feel like you're always kind of chasing that next high, if you will. But I don't, I think if you're going to add Long Beach, it's something, a road course or something has to kind of come off somewhere, in my opinion, because I don't want this to be a road course racing series, right? Obviously, ovals is kind of where it's at and the bread and butter of the series. But I do think it's something interesting to look at. I think, obviously, it's great to watch IndyCar race there. Even, you know, IndyCar tried something last week running this kind of all-star event at the Thermal Club, and that race didn't really turn out as, I think, as exciting as people thought. A lot of people were pretty disappointed with it, you know. But I think these teams in series have to keep trying different things to keep that fan interest, right? Just unfortunately just going and racing the same, you know, 10, 15, 20 tracks that NASCAR has been going to for years is kind of, fan interest has dwindled for whatever reason. I mean, you and me and most people on this panel will probably tune in and watch whatever they race, whenever and wherever they race, right? Overall, obviously, yeah, we've seen things dwindle and they've got to keep things. And I mean, it was really cool to see just how fascinated just random people on the street were with the Chicago street race last year. It was just really awesome to see. And people were saying, like, we got to get tickets to this, like just asking questions and really piquing the interest. And now will those people tune in week to week and become diehard fans? Like, maybe not. But I guarantee you, like, I think you're going to see a lot bigger fan turnout next year, whether it be people that were new and interested or people that were just so pissed off that it rained so damn much that they want to take in a weekend of normalcy there. So I do think it's interesting and adds kind of another cool, you know, destination unique type thing to the series schedule if it were to happen. But my only concern is just I don't want them to just be like, all right, street course of Chicago work, let's go race the streets of Long Beach and let's go race the streets here. And before you know it, you've got three or four street course races on the schedule. And we do that for a couple of years and that kind of wanes off as well. So maybe a little bit of a long-winded answer, but I like the fact that looking at it, I'm sure they're considering a lot of different, crazy, unique ideas. Will they all happen? Probably not, obviously not. But I do think it's something that would be pretty cool. And they're obviously very focused on getting something in that California market, and obviously they don't have Auto Club anymore, and if they don't come back to the Coliseum, they're going to look for something. So I think that's a solid option. I just don't know what you would take off the schedule then if that were to happen.
Yeah, and we've talked too about rotating tracks. You know, maybe they race at Circuit Americas this year, but next year it's the Long Beach Grand Prix.
Right.
Who knows? But I really think I applaud NASCAR for doing everything that they're doing. Now, NASCAR is actively, according to Racer Magazine, NASCAR has been actively pursuing 50% stake in the Long Beach race, a staple on the IndyCar calendar since 1984, that became available for acquisition last year by the estate of the late businessman Kevin Kalkoven. So there's an opportunity here for them to gain 50% or more stake in that Long Beach race. And so reading between the lines, because we don't know what NASCAR has in mind there, but apparently they are actively seeking that 50% stake at Long Beach. And I think that if we read behind the lines and speculate a little bit, then we can assume or project that NASCAR is maybe looking to have a race at Long Beach, which I think would be fantastic. I think it's pretty exciting to consider that as a potential. And, you know, I can't wait to see if it does become a real that they get that 50% stake there. I thought it was really interesting that they bought out the lease for 50 years at Bowman Gray, too. You didn't get to comment on that. Do you want to say anything about that, Brian?
Yeah, that's fair. You guys must have probably covered that on one of the previous shows that I wasn't on the panel. But, yeah, I think it's interesting because I feel like now Bowman Gray, the only times we ever hear about it anymore is when it turns into a complete trash show and awful. And people were concerned that NASCAR would maybe come in and change that and make it maybe, I don't know, maybe too corporate. They've said they don't really have any plans to kind of change that. So it is interesting, though, that I feel like there's got to be something there, right? Why are they getting involved? Are they going to try to bring, you know, something NASCAR related there? How that's all going to work, I don't know. But obviously if they're buying into it, then there's going to be some sort of changes, I think. Like them or dislike them, I'm not really sure. But I do think there'll be some sort of change there. I just don't think that they would get involved and leave everything the way that it is, personally. Curious to hear, do you have a recap of what everyone else on the panel thought when you guys talked about it?
Yeah, pretty much. Excuse me, some speculation there about possibly with the Coliseum having their last race for the Clash, there's speculation that maybe they'll do a short track Clash at the Bowman Gray Stadium. So we'll have to wait and see what actually happens. But I can see them doing some one-off events there in maybe all three series that could produce some pretty interesting racing at Bowman Gray. We know, one thing we know about Bowman Gray, if there's racing at Bowman Gray, there's going to be some hard feelings and perhaps some fights afterwards. So it's kind of, from what I understand, it's kind of a different breed of racer that races at Bowman Gray, and it can get rather hot very quickly.
Yeah, I feel that's a really good way to put it as well. Yeah, never been there personally myself either. And again, I feel like sometimes all we see are the clips when things get wild and crazy. It's obviously not like that every week. Maybe it is, but obviously we kind of only see the bits and pieces that really kind of catch the attention or, you know, going to get the clicks and the views. But yeah, I think it'd be a great place to take the trucks or something. I really would love to see the trucks get on more short tracks and stuff like that and really kind of get back to their roots. I think it kind of continue to get farther and farther away with the trucks, and I get it. It financially makes probably a lot more sense to run them at tracks. We've already got a weekend going with Xfinity and Cup, but you know, I love the weekends where they race, you know, like the Milwaukee Mile this year and stuff like that. So I'd love to see them have some more standalone stuff. Sounds like Bowman Gray would be a great opportunity. Obviously, it's fairly close to the area as well. Would kind of cut down on travel costs as well for the teams at the lower levels. I think ARCA running there would be fantastic, you know, whether it's just an ARCA East race or it's, you know, ARCA National, ARCA Big ARCA or whatever you want to call it. But I think the opportunity there for something like that to happen would be kind of cool, you know, and I think, yeah, a cup, you know, doing the either the Clash or the All-Star race at different tracks. I mean, I think that's what the All-Star race and the Clash should be intended for, right? Doing something maybe a little bit wild and crazy. Maybe it's a little bit ridiculous. It gets some more attention and things like that, but it's not part of the actual championship in the regular season. So I do think there's some opportunities there for different things, and curious to see, you know, where it might go.
Well, all right. I 100% agree with you. I like the idea of different series like the trucks racing at Bowman Gray. And you're right. They would still save them money if they're able to race close to home there. You don't want all the races to be close at home. But this would be an opportunity for them to have a one-hop that really highlights them at Bowman Gray Stadium. But the Clash, yep, that's an opportunity too. So we'll see. We'll see what NASCAR does with it, and we'll kind of go from there. But it's kind of nice to see NASCAR exploring these other opportunities. I'm going to move on to, because we're coming up to the half-hour mark here, and I don't know if we're going to finish it, but I want to talk about this before we go off air. And that is, before I do that, no, we're on the podcast. I don't have to do that. Let's go ahead and talk about this. North Wilkesboro Speedway, last week during cleaning and inspection, there were cracks in the original concrete stand that led to the discovery of a sinkhole that unearthed a portion of the front stretch seating in sections N toward turn one. All the seats were removed for further inspection. An open area believed to be a former moonshine cave was found under the grandstand. So they're underway making repairs to fix that foundation and replace that grandstand seats before that May 14th to 19th All-Star Race weekend. But how interesting is that, that they've unearthed a moonshine cave under the front stretch grandstands out at North Wilkesboro Speedway?
That is crazy. When I first saw that come across one of my social feeds, I had to like actually go like do some other checking and make sure it was legitimate, right? Because we see so many weird, crazy, random, made-up things out there these days that aren't legitimate. And I was like, wow, how crazy is that? And like, did nobody know it was even there? Like, that's just crazy. And like, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I wish there was a way that, I mean, I'm sure they're going to fill it in and do whatever, but like, it'd be kind of cool if there's some way they could like almost like restore that and like make it like, you know, a historical landmark or something you could even like tour or do or stuff like that. I mean, I have no idea like what it looks like or anything like that, but like that would be really neat. I'm sure they're probably going to have to structurally just do what they can to get it back in good shape and ready, like you said, for the race weekend coming up there in less than 2 months now. But yeah, I was just like, wait, what? Like, and I still feel like it's one of those things that's hard to believe unless you're actually like seeing it or taking a look at it. Cause I feel like it's just, wow.
Yeah. Wow factor there. This is what I posted on our team's page was actually the press release that came from North Wilkesboro Speedway. So that tells me this is 100% legit. It says, for decades, rumors have circulated that historic North Wilkesboro Speedway was the site of a secret moonshine still. Now some Wilkes County locals may have more reason to say, I told you so, because they found it. And now they're trying to repair it. But I agree with you. How cool would that be to restore that moonshine cave? And then offer, that would be like a tourist attraction, I think, for a lot of people, and especially for race fans that are going to the track for the All-Star races. Lost opportunity if they don't restore that, for sure. And I hope that they do and find a different way in other than through the grandstands to allow fans to take a look at that and use it as a tourist attraction. I could see them having moonshine whiskey down there for sale.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
with the North Wilkesboro labels, you know, North Wilkesboro track label. I think that would be so awesome, and I think they could really market that race. They'd have to pull in more seating, I think, if they were able to market that properly. So, yeah, I think it was a cool story. That track opened in 1947 and became one of NASCAR's original racetracks when it hosted the season finale for the inaugural Strictly Stock, now the Cup Series, in 1949. The track is a .0625-mile short track. It closed in 1996, but they extensively restored it recently, and now they've been back in action at North Wilkesboro since May 21st of last year when they hosted the All-Star Race there. So let's get on top of that and do some marketing there with that underground cave, moonshine cave. A lot of opportunity there, Brian.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree for sure. Maybe they're thinking about something, but maybe they're also just thinking, how do we get this bag going for what we need to do here in a couple of months. But I'm curious. I haven't had a chance to follow up anymore on that or see if there's any other stories. Hopefully someone went out there to take some pictures and do video or something like that, get some coverage. I know I used to enjoy it. I think it was during COVID. People were going out there and, you know, before the track was being restored and kind of, you know, sneaking onto the property, if you will, and walking around. I thought that was kind of cool. One of the things I was doing when I had a ton of free time on my hands and nothing better to do during the lockdown. So kind of neat, and hopefully they have some cool video or something that maybe surfaces of kind of what it all looks like.
Yeah, when you consider that it's creating a sinkhole at this point, there's certainly some danger that is presented with that as well. So if they don't move forward with the marketing plan as we envision, that could be the reason why, because that could certainly be dangerous as well. So I'm sure they'll reinforce the cracks in the foundation there on that front stretch and try to make sure everything is safe for fans as well. So I thought I should mention that as well.
Agreed.
Okay. I don't see any others on our list. Was there anything else on your mind that you wanted to talk about before we sign off?
We covered Long Beach. We covered COTA. We covered North Wilkesboro, Sinkhole. Yeah, I think we pretty much touched on everything we got for this week heading into racing at Richmond.
Well, so we can go ahead and sign off then. We're a little bit past the going off air time, so we don't have a lot to add this week on our Hot Topic Sound Off segment, but I'm definitely looking forward to the weekend of racing out at Richmond. This season has been exciting so far, and I'm, as always, I'm a diehard fan, so I'm looking forward to the rest of the season as well. And I know you are too, Jay. I'm sorry, Brian. What tracks are you thinking of going to this year?
You know, that's a great question. I keep going back and forth, and I look at stuff, and then it's like, oh, this is here and this is there. And definitely a lot of stuff kind of centered around Wisconsin. I'll make it to, like, the Slinger Nationals and Kikana and a couple other races at Slinger. Disappointed SRX disbanded because we're looking forward to that at Slinger.
Oh, no.
Skip Barber bought it. Skip Barber Racing bought it. Don Hawk, who was, I believe, the CEO of SRX, has signed on with Skip Barber as well. So they're obviously looking to maybe do something there with that. They wouldn't buy it if they weren't or had some sort of plan going on. Don't know if that'll happen as soon as this year, but you never know how quickly that stuff will roll out. Speaking of other tracks, definitely Road America for sure. I'll try to get there as much as I can. I'm only about 30 minutes from there, so definitely go over there. Unfortunately, NASCAR is not racing there at all. Get to some dirt stuff. There's still a dirt car my dad's company sponsors that runs in the IRA series around the Wisconsin and Illinois areas primarily. I'd love to make it out to a couple of high limit races as well when they kind of get to the Midwest. See Larson and Sweet's new series.
Mm-hmm.
I think I want to go back to Indy for them being back on the oval. So that's kind of circled as a maybe. Hoping to get to Iowa, though I'm going to be on vacation that weekend leading into it. So I'm not quite sure that's going to work to be there in person. I'm still torn. Do I want to be on the beach in Mexico or at Iowa Speedway? It's a toss up. So I might come back a day early from the rest of the family on the trip. Haven't really decided on that one yet. That's still up in the air. I got a couple months to figure that out. I'm trying to think. I don't know. I go back and forth as to where I want to go and what I want to see. I feel like it was such a short window of time once it starts getting nice in the Midwest, right? Of like every weekend I can be at two or three or four different tracks. Plus I want to enjoy other things as well. So it's definitely a hard decisions to make, but I think I'm going to eventually sit down here and do like I do most years. And I put it all on a spreadsheet and had different highlight colors for sure doing this one, maybe doing this one if this works great. Definitely be back at the NASCAR Chicago Street Race as well. They've been doing some really great promotion, I feel like, of that race. And I just saw some quotes, I believe, from an interview Kelly Crandall did with Julie Geese, the president of NASCAR Chicago now, saying that, you know, she's doing all these appearances and they're trying to do all the STEM stuff in schools and promote the race and stuff. And last year it was questions of, how's the city going to this and that? And how's the race going to impact everything? It's like this year, so many people are asking questions about Shane and how exciting that was and things like that. And so it seems like the narrative is shifting on it a little bit. Obviously there's the people that are just going to be against it just to be against it. But I'm really excited to see what that'll do. And fingers crossed, it's a good weather weekend for
everybody, because I mean, I did run into some fans last year. They were just for the concerts, right? The race was kind of a side thing to them, where, you know, the concerts are normally a side thing to us. So obviously they didn't get to see their main thing they came for. So really hoping that we don't get, you know, 97 million inches of rain over those few days, because that'll be great to see a beautiful, you know, sunny couple of July days for that race. I think will be awesome. And hopefully really go a long way to maybe solidifying that and other street course races on the schedule. So what about you? You have any plans to get to anything for sure?
I don't have any firm plans yet myself. I would like to get out to Iowa Speedway. I was hoping my brother would be able to go with me. He's having some medical things going on right now, so he may not be able to. But, Iowa for sure I would like to get to. I'm not sure about any of the others. I still have Texas Motor Speedway on my list, or COTA. COTA obviously is going to have to wait for next year as a possibility. But, I just haven't decided yet where I want to go. I've thought about the Chicago Street Race, but now I've got some family things that are kind of coming up around that as well. So I'm not sure that's going to work out for me. But, it's been a long time. And I know my brother and I have been talking about going out to Phoenix or somewhere different. I don't think we're going to make it out to Phoenix this year. That's one we have kind of targeted for maybe next year. So we'll see how that goes, especially with his medical things going on right now. So it would be great to go to all of them, but we'll have to see how things play out.
That's also fair. Yeah, I feel you on that.
So, okay, well, with nothing else to talk about, I think we'll call it a day. Brian, you want to go ahead and do your sign-off, and we'll close out the show for today.
Yeah, sounds good. Brian Eberle, the best way to follow on Twitter, be Eberle18. And like I kind of mentioned, we'll be heading out some tracks here later on this season. I'm looking forward to Richmond this week. And what do I got left? A few more weeks to co-host before Jay's back?
Yeah, I haven't counted yet. We said six races in. I know that means we're probably at the halfway point. I'm guessing. Okay. All right. Well, it's been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you being here to stand in for Jay as well. I know what happened on Monday, just so everybody knows, I guess there's a lot of construction going on the freeways out in California, and Sal was telling me it took him 6 hours to get to work, and he was on his way back and already 2 hours at a standstill and still not home yet, so he was worried that it was going to be another long commute to get home.
Chicago.
Yeah, it's terrible. I will say I've been up to Chicago a few times, and I know they're doing a lot of work on 294. I've been pleasantly surprised how well the traffic has been moving during the construction on 294 out in Chicago.
Yeah, that's fair.
Have you had to travel on 294 at all?
Yeah, a little bit. It hasn't been as bad, I feel like, as it could be for Chicago, I will say that. Speaking of long travel times, though, it did take me about 3.5 hours to get from the far northern burbs down to the city for the Chicago Street Race last year on Thursday afternoon. So looking forward to maybe find a different way to get – I think I'll drive to the western suburbs and take a train down this year. So although it was nice to have my car there with stuff to throw in and out of it throughout the weekend. So
I'm not sure.
Do a little bit of game planning for that, so. Got some time, but.
Yep. But anyway, that's why we had to cancel. He was calling me from the car and was going nowhere when he called me. And I know it was last minute. I didn't think I could get a co-host that quickly, so we just dropped the show. And hopefully he won't run into that this weekend, but are you available on Monday just in case?
Yeah, I think I should be on Monday. Yeah.
Okay. Just in case he's still running into traffic issues out there. I might have to call somebody at the last minute, and I'd probably go to Jay first and you second, but in case Jay can't do it, I'll just kind of put that out there just in case.
Sounds good.
All right, so I am Fan for Racing Site on Twitter, Fan for Racing Blog and Radio on Facebook, as well as our website, fanforracing.com. Jay did do a great interview a couple weeks ago with Tyler Hudson, a short track racer out at Jackson Motor Speedway, and it was really cool to hear him talk about some NASCAR connections during that interview. And so if you get a chance to go back and listen to that, I'd highly recommend it. Again, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'm looking forward to the racing out at Richmond Raceway this weekend and for the rest of the season. So I hope everybody enjoys their race weekend. Be safe, and we'll look forward to talking with everybody again on Monday. Take care, everybody.
Have a good one.